Penguin Random House Audio presents The Vanished Bride by Bella Ellis, read for you by Elizabeth Nolden. For my mother, Dawn Coleman, giver of books, teller of tales, and lover of literature. The human heart has hidden treasures, in secret kept, in silence sealed. The thoughts, the hopes, the dreams, the pleasures, whose charms were broken, if revealed. Evening Solace by Charlotte Bronte. Haworth Parsonage, December 1851. Drawing her shawl a little closer around her, Charlotte adjusted her writing slope once more and dipped the nib of her pen back into the ink, her head bent low, nose just above the paper. Yet, just as so many times before, her hand hovered over the blank page, and it seemed impossible to put pen to paper in a house so empty of anything but the ghosts of those she loved. All was very quiet now. Even the fire in the grate seemed muffled and muted, and it felt near impossible to draw any warmth from the brightly dancing flames, almost as if she were already a ghost herself. Papa was in his study, as he always seemed to be these days. Tabby and Martha were in the kitchen, locking up for the night, even though, according to the clock that stood on the staircase, it was only a little after 7. Outside, the night leaned in against the little house, the weight of it creaking against the window glass. But even as the wind howled down the chimney breast, all that Charlotte heard was silence. All she felt was absence. All she knew was loss. Not even Emily's beloved dog Keeper was here anymore, to keep her company, with his snuffles and barks, playfully dragging at the hems of her skirts with his teeth. At least now that the dog, too, was gone, Charlotte didn't have to witness his hopeful eyes, searching for his mistress when the back door was opened, nor feel her own spirits rise every time the cold air blew in, bringing with it the promise of Emily, back from a march across the moor. Oh, how she craved the companionship that had once seemed as commonplace as her own breath. It had been such a short time, and yet 1,000 years ago, that she had shared this table, this house, her entire life with her siblings. Here, with what felt like the whole world at their backs, the three of them had talked, written, maddened, known and loved one another with such steadfast strength that it had been all-sustaining. Here they had laughed and argued as she had written Jane Eyre and her sisters their own great works, not one of them guessing at the whirlwind they were inviting into their small, humble lives. Now Emily, Anne, and Branwell were all gone to a better place, and for the sister left behind, this mortal existence was almost unbearably lonely. And yet, Charlotte's mouth curled into a small echo of a smile as she remembered what adventures they had forged together, the dangers they had faced, the shocking revelations they had uncovered, and the secrets they had kept. From the fashionable drawing rooms of London to the soirees of New York, the world had talked about those Bronte women who had wrought such passion and pride on the page. At first, some doubted they were men, then others refused to believe they could be women. And it made Charlotte smile to think how very little of the truth those people knew, how very little of what she and her sisters truly were. Now her sisters and her brother Branwell were all dead. Not another living soul on this earth knew everything. Not one memory of the wonders and the horrors that they had discovered for themselves had ever been committed to paper, and any correspondence that might have revealed them had been meticulously burned by Charlotte herself. When, one day, it would become Charlotte's turn to join her siblings in God's grace, All that had happened in those few glorious, thrilling years, the last years that they would be together, would die with her. No one would ever know of their adventures. Outside that very pane of glass that shook and trembled in its frame, as she sat alone at the table, a universe of humanity gusted as hard as the wind in a ceaseless vortex of life and death. And all you needed, in order to uncover its darkest secrets, was to know exactly where to look. It might even be said, Charlotte thought to herself with a smile, as her nib finally joined with paper, and she began to forge worlds out of ink, that none had ever lived such adventurous, dangerous, and exciting lives as those three women who grew up in a village no one had ever heard of, on the edge of the windswept and desolate moor. Those were secrets that would never be told. But, oh, what wonderful secrets they were. Prologue. The first thing Matilda French saw was the blood. There was such a quantity of it that for several moments she couldn't make sense of the blackish pool of liquid that was spreading slowly under the closed door, not until the iron scent hit her, and she was reminded at once of the day her mother died, and the smell of her blood mingled with freshly cut violets. Only then did the inevitable violence of what she was looking at begin to make sense of itself, the realization that something dreadful had happened, creeping through her veins like an infection. And yet, it was so unexpected, so strange to make such a discovery in the perfect quiet of a pre-dawn house, that at first she did not scream. She did not faint. Shock held her captive, and as if mesmerized into a trance-like state, body separated from mind, she did what she always did, not knowing what else to do. She knocked twice on the door. Madam? The boards were sticky underfoot, the room still dark and full of shadows. Dawn had yet to lighten the sky outside. Her voice was barely more than a whisper. Her next words made little sense in the face of such horror.
Mrs. Chester, are you well?
When she pushed the door open, she found the room silent and empty of its occupant, and covered in so much blood that she felt she might drown simply by inhaling. As her eyes adjusted to the light, she could make out that her mistress's bed was empty, though from the head to the foot it was covered in what looked like one great ink stain, spreading outwards from the center like a monstrous butterfly. Trembling, breath held, Mattie crossed to the window, where she dragged open the heavy curtains and loosened the window latch to let some of the damp, cold air in, sucking it in desperately. The first thin light of morning cast its veil over the room, and when finally she turned back to the bed, Mattie understood the terrible truth of what she was seeing. Murder. 1. Haworth, 1845. Charlotte.
You cannot just stop, Emily,
Charlotte half chided, half laughed, as she stumbled into the back of her taller sister.
There is neither the room nor the time for stopping.
It had become the sister's ritual in recent weeks, this circular walk about the dining room table, talking out their ideas, spinning them into thin air until they could see the words forming over their heads, lit by firelight and shaped by smoke. It was not a grand dining room. If anything, it was rather cramped, almost entirely filled with the pretty table and a rather worn black sofa. Charlotte had chosen the wallpaper, in dusky shades of pink and grey, as modest and muted as the plumage of a pigeon. On the wall hung a portrait of Lord Horatio.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?